Diane Feely, welcome to KABU.
Thank you very much. Good to be out on the West Coast.
Diane Feely has fought for social justice since her teenage years as a member of the Catholic worker movement, and 20 years later, she industrialized, along with many other Socialist Workers Party comrades, on the Ford and General Motors assembly line. Their fight was not solely for a bigger piece of the pie, but for real participation and decision-making in a society in which democracy is not confined to occasional elections, but is nourished in daily life. So on the shop floor line, she fought both the companies and the United Water Workers Union, building worker resistance to the company that's driving down wages and benefits and imposing speed up and more stringent mandatory overtime. As to the union, she and her comrades attacked the UAW as completely undemocratic, with union bosses basically electing themselves year after year and getting more friendly and receptive to the companies. And all through her outer year, she was writing, by now one book, hundreds of articles on winning democratic unions in power. This year, to their great surprise, her fellow dissidents won the UAW national election and immediately were challenged to prepare for contract negotiations. In fact, the contract has already expired a couple days ago. You can check the UAW website. It's now run by the Radical Reformers, and they will surely discuss any contract and the entire outcome as of now. So, Diane Feely, tell us about how you and other dissidents, socialists and not, succeeded in defeating the union bosses. And then we can discuss how the new UAW is planning to put pressure on the companies, including strategic sit-ins and strikes. In a struggle that's crucially important to manufacturing workers around the United States and indeed the world. Finally, I hope to discuss how both the industry and the union must transform so that humanity has a chance of stopping global roasting.
First, I should say that while I was an auto worker, one of the most important campaigns that I was involved in was the fight against two-tier wages, which we actually won in my plant, but didn't win throughout the company. And so two-tier was imposed upon us. I then retired, but was very active, because retirees still are very active in the UAW. And when the recession happened in 2008-2009, we decided that as long as the federal government was going to bail out both Chrysler and GM, that they should impose conditions on GM and Chrysler so that the industry would survive and grow and workers would have good jobs. And we put forward the demand that the companies should be taken over and become an industry of mass transit, and that we should build buses and railroad cars and create a mass transportation industry. So we called our group Auto Worker Caravan. And we continued during that whole period as Auto Worker Caravan, although then the government interests were sold back. So the government no longer owned the majority of the companies. And a group of people who came around to Auto Worker Caravan decided what would be good to do would be to fight for one person, one vote for electing our top officers. That if we were able to do that, maybe we could change the union. And certainly we would make electing our top officers, who have a lot of sway in the setting of the policy of the UAW, that would be a big step forward. So to do that meant changing the Constitution. And we began that process of getting locals to adopt that demand according to how the change would occur. However, what happened is that the corruption of these top officers was exposed by the federal government during that period. So while we lost, the time had run out for us to challenge on that constitutional point, the UAW officials were being indicted by the federal government. and the question is whether the federal government would take over the UAW. In the end, they didn't, and there was an agreement worked out between the top officers and the mediator, the federal monitor, that they would work on making the union more democratic. And at that point, Unite All Workers for Democracy, which was the group that had been working on this issue, said, why don't we have a referendum on the issue and let people vote? And so that's what the monitor went ahead and did, and we won that vote.
So you won that vote, and you then had a fair election. How did you win it?
So after we won the vote, we had to go almost directly into an election period, and our caucus was really relatively small. And so the idea of running candidates was something we really hadn't thought deeply about, and yet we were forced to. So we, in the end, were able to contest for half of the offices. And I will tell you, most of us didn't think we would win one of the offices. Instead, we won all of them. I think that was not so much because of our brilliant campaigning, but because workers were so disgusted by the corruption of the top officers that I think people said, well, we've got to try something else. We were on the ballot. We said we would not be for concessions. We would reject tiers, and we would be against corruption. So we were able to win the vote on all of our officers. And that represents just half of the entire executive board. In addition, there was one independent who ran, and that person was also elected. So we have a slight majority on the International Executive Board.
Bill Resnick here for the Old Mole Variety Hour on Cable Radio, 90.7 FM, Portland, Oregon. Today I'm talking to Diane Feeley, who industrialized on the assembly lines of Ford and General Motors as a socialist joining radicals to build worker resistance to the companies and to the union leadership who had basically set up an undemocratic election system, allowing the companies to drive down worker salaries, impose constant speed up, and more stringent mandatory overtime requirements. Reformer defeated the old guard, putting back in power radicals like those that founded the union almost 100 years ago. We just discussed how they did it. For the remainder of this interview, we'll discuss their program as articulated by the new UAW president, Sean Fain, a Bernie Sanders supporter who championed Sanders' Green New Deal program, demanding better work at higher wages, full guaranteed employment, fair taxation, an end to corruption, and action on climate change, including a great mobilization of U.S. productive power to build out renewable energies. So, Diane, why don't you talk further about the demands?
So, when we ran for office, our big point was we were against corruption. We were against two or more tiers. In some cases, they could be as many as 10 different tiers in a plant of wages and benefits. And we promised to listen to the demands of working people, the people who worked in the plants. What were the main issues? So we came up with 10 of them. One is to eliminate tiers, and I think that's something that every worker you'll meet will say, yes, we've got to get rid of tiers. Not only tiers in terms of wages, but also benefits, different health care benefits or no health care benefits for some workers, part-time workers who are kept on for years and years. So the whole question of eliminating tiers is very important. The next thing is big wage increases. Workers at the Detroit 3 haven't had effective wages increase since the recession. Restore COLA, that is, we need a cost of living adjustment, which is very important as you have inflation, but also at the end of that period with the new contract, that's built into your wages. So that's one of the key ways that your wages rise. We want defined pension benefits. Currently, all workers who retire after 2006 receive no post-retirement health care and don't receive very good benefits. Maybe they have a 401k, but that's dependent on what they're able to save. Another really important issue is the right to strike over plant closings. That's because there's a tremendous restructuring going on inside the industry currently. So over the last 20 years, 65 plants have been closed and some plants have been idled. So what we're saying is we want to be able to have the right to strike in those plant closures. Another issue that's really very relevant is the idea that we're not just workers, we're also people, we're also human beings who have lives and interests. And so what Sean Fain has been talking about is Working Family Protection Program against the excessive use of overtime, because some people are forced to work 70 and 80 hour work weeks, well, instead of hiring another person, you see, and that when someone gets laid off, what happens to that person's security? So if there is a layoff, there's got to be some kind of protection. Other issues are more paid time off to be with families. Again, the whole idea that we're not just workers, but people in society who have the right to go to a baseball game with our kids or a graduation or have Martin Luther King a day off as a paid holiday. So all of these things are really very important. And one of the most important issues for retirees is that retirees don't get any increase in their pensions unless the current workers fight for their right to have a higher wage. So retirees also haven't had any increase in wages, and that's something that we could do with this contract. So it's really a whole program that we realize, of course, we're not going to be able to meet all 10 of these demands, but we can make gains. And our important thing about what Sean Fain is saying is that we have the right to all of these things. And to challenge with a corporation CEO's made like 40% increase in their benefits. Well, we're the workers. Why shouldn't we get a 40% increase in our benefits through these various, meeting these various needs?
Yeah, that's when the companies are making record profits and they're putting it into further wealth for their investor class. And the corporate leadership and maintaining their policy of two-tier systems, forcing down the income of so many of our workers, some working very near the minimum wage, in fact, and part-time. My sense is that at least Sean Fain is very interested in also in climate change, particularly in electric vehicles. One last substantive issue. Climate change is an existential threat for all of us. It's unknown how the radicals took over the union are dealing with it in terms of the transformation of the industry towards electricity. And in fact, what is absolutely necessary is moving into mass transit and building a whole lot less cars, particularly heavy cars and trucks, which add huge amounts of carbon dioxide to the air. It's a complex question for the union, but how do you see them dealing with it?
Well, I would say until the election, Sean had to be in a runoff against the administration caucus's candidate, Ray Curry. So he did not take office until this March and had to immediately go into the beginnings of preparing for the contract campaign. Our contract is up September 14th at midnight. So that didn't leave him very much time. So I would say before the election of the new folks, the UAW avoided discussion of electric vehicles. They had gotten a paper from the research department, which said, of course, that there will be fewer workers needed for electric vehicles because there were fewer parts. And therefore, what would reduce the number of auto workers by about 30%. So their attitude was, let's just not talk about this. So you have to understand, this is just a very beginning discussion.
Diane Feely, we've been talking about the auto workers union, the change in leadership, and the demands that the leadership is making in the upcoming contract negotiations. What could be done if you're not in Detroit or other cities with production plants to support this very, very important struggle by the United Auto Workers under new leadership?
I would say go to the UAW website and look at all of the materials that are there to get a very good idea, including videos. For example, there's one video by a Ford worker, a single mom of two young kids, who spent 8 years as a temporary and had to move to four different plants. And the second thing is there's a petition there that everybody can sign to send off to the CEOs of these companies. Our point is that all of the companies are in cahoots with each other to deprive workers of the kind of life that they need. I think the companies are willing to give a wage increase, but they don't want to give in on anything else. They want to have very strict absentee policies, so you can't take a day off, or you can only take your vacation when they're down. I mean, they think of all of these ways of preventing people from taking a sick leave. So having people work all of the time, that's what they want. And so they have even incredibly strict absentee policies. They want to have situations where people work overtime continually. I remember when I first had my job in 79, I worked a 50-hour work week 1 week and 58 the next week. And that was routine. And then they declared an emergency, and you had to work 7 days at 10 hours. So you're working a 70-hour work week. So issues of absenteeism and a regular work week are really key. And, of course, the question of absenteeism. So if you go to the UAW website, you'll see all of the things that we're involved with and get a sense of the campaign. It's unclear to us at this point whether we will be targeting one company, which has been the traditional method, but with the new leadership, we don't do the traditional method. So will we target all three companies, or will we pick certain plants that are key to the production line? This was done 25 years ago with only 11,000 workers being out on strike. We basically stopped production throughout most of the industry. So there's different possibilities, but September 15th, I'm assuming we will be on one strike. Now, right now, we're doing some rallies and practice pickets. If there's a Labor Day parade in your neighborhood, in your city, please go to that and participate in support of the UAW's demands.
Diane Fieldly, thanks for talking to us today.
Okay, bye.